Meg Mac, brand new tune for her called Only Love from her new album Matter of Time on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania. Have you heard of the genre, literary and film and movie, etc. genre called cli-fi? Not sci-fi, but cli-fi. It's climate fiction. So looking at the future effects of climate change. Now, sometimes it's just the background to the story. For example, the movie Avatar. It's an action film full of aliens, but they're exploring space because the Earth has been ruined behind them. But sometimes the changes to the climate drives the story, and that's very true in the new Tasmanian novel Eat My Shadow by Linda Coburn. It's an extraordinary book. Hobart's been largely abandoned. The rivers are poisoned or dry. Small pockets of survivors are doing their best in the broken world left behind. Linda Coburn, good morning to you.
Hello, Joel. How are you?
Look, I'm great, thank you. You've created a very convincing and terrible world. How did you go about making it real?
I didn't think it was a terrible world. How's that? probably it took me about 10 years to actually write that over, not concertedly all at once. So I spent a lot of time thinking about it and driving along with and seeing where sea level rise would have taken the place, etc. And yeah, no.
Did you do much research? Did you talk to many scientists about this sort of thing?
A lot of reading, but I've been doing a lot of reading in this area anyway, and I really wanted to connect people into the concept of what we're creating for our descendants and create, because, you know, we talk about our grandchildren and it all seems a little bit whiffly. So I tried to make it real.
It's not just grandchildren in this, it's child. It's the two main characters is a father and a child, a father who is an academic at the university and who has had to adapt to this, agrarian existence that he's now got, and a kid who's grown up knowing none of that. Mm. It's really close, isn't it?
Mm. And it is actually really close, because I leave it till fairly late in the book to actually say what year it is. And Collapse was actually 2036 in the book, and this is set in 2053.
How does it make you feel to have set up this world that you think is believably something that could happen? Does it make you feel sad? Does it make you feel angry?
Oh, look, I think climate grief is a big thing, and I'd certainly embedded quite a lot into that. But at the same time, I think it's a very hopeful narrative. There's a lot of love and humanity all the way through it. Yes, some crappy thing. Oh, sorry. Bad things happen.
We'll allow crappy. That's all right.
So yeah, some things happen, but really, on balance, it is about love, and particularly a love story between the father and son who are both been trying to protect each other. Well, the father's been trying to protect the son for a long time and holding on to his own grief. And yeah, I think it actually ties up in the end to be about love.
The background of the story is really big, you know, the destruction of the kind of natural world, but the tale itself is very intimate. How did you come to the tale? Did you have the tale of a father and son and their existence together in your head first, or did you have the destruction of the world first?
Oh, it's actually a big one. I actually wrote the title when I was 19, and I was part of a poem, and I thought, one day I'm going to write a book with the title,
yeah.
Eat My Shadow. It was actually Eat My Shadow, Swallow My Echo, which is something that the last Prime Minister of Australia had said at a party, but inebriated, and he'd slipped out that when they were talking about mass starvation, he's gone, well, they can just eat my shadow and swallow my echo. And
it's the modern version of Let Them Eat Cake.
Yes, exactly. And you know, the son actually meets up with the last Prime Minister of Australia, and he's part of the story as well. But yes, it was I started writing it in 2013 as part of a uni assignment and did two chapters and went, I just want to keep writing this, but of course didn't have that ability to do it. So,
and life kind of gets in the way of those big projects, doesn't it?
It does. And then a couple of years ago, about 4 years ago, I just came across those chapters and read them and went, I have to write this. And I was working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. So I taught myself to lucid dream, and I actually was writing, I wrote most of that book at night, in the middle of it.
Lucid dream. So that is kind of dreaming with some measure of control to it.
That's right. So it was spontaneous. I actually think the book wanted to be written because I wasn't actually trying to do it. I think the book taught me to lucid dream because it knew I had a really huge desire to write it, and so this was the only time it could happen. And I would actually just go to sleep, and I thought I was sort of half asleep, and I'd start thinking about it spontaneously, and I would be not really awake and not really asleep, and it was like being narrated to me, and then I'd force myself awake. It took me ages to be able to do that, and then write it all down, and then try and read it the next day.
How lucid was the writing that you were making after lucid dreaming, or was it a little rambly?
No, it was pretty much on. I didn't need to change a lot.
So it's what I've been reading.
It's what you've been reading. I would say at least 50-60% of that was lucid dreamed.
Now, the ex-Prime Minister who we meet as a character in the book is a very nasty piece of work. And the more you find out about him, the nastier you realise that he is.
Psychopath.
Is it based on someone?
I just think our system is psychopathic. And as such, he represents and embodies that.
What part of our system is psychopathic?
That we are based it on capitalism, which is competition. It's the dog eat dog mentality of life. We stick as much nice stuff as we can around the outside of it, but really, what we're doing is predating on a planet.
Now, the different groups that Finn meets as he kind of goes on his journey, because essentially he's walking from Huonville to Hobart and back.
Mm.
They have some really interesting kind of philosophies that they've adapted to make their way of living work for themselves. Where did they come from? Are they inventions of yours, or are there kind of some ideas that you've drawn from other groups that actually exist?
I think a lot of it was Indigenous culturally inspired, but then bringing them into a post-collapse concept, yeah. So very much so, like reciprocity was a really big thing that one of the groups in the Huon had created, which is that for everything they took from the system, they had to actually give back in a form. So it's not like, you know, you chop down trees here and you pay somebody for it over here. It was actually a direct involvement. And that's actually very much an Indigenous concept because, of course, if you're taking more than from the system than you're giving back, eventually there's only one result. You run out of things to take, which is what we've done. We have lost reciprocity, which is a key concept of an Indigenous cultures.
There is a very strong community feeling in several of the groups that Finn meets, that the group is bonded together. Is that something we're missing?
Absolutely. And I think that's where the love and humanity came into it. And one of the characters actually says that, you know, we thought that we would be entering a dog-eat-dog world, but actually the other thing came around. We needed each other, so we couldn't afford to hate each other or dislike each other, and so we simply stopped. And they formed these very cohesive communities based on reciprocity, yeah.
If we had this societal collapse, what wouldn't you miss? What would be the thing that you'd be the most glad to just leave behind?
The working day. Aren't we all tired? Aren't we all just busy beyond belief that we can no longer embed ourselves in being who we really are and being with our families, and that we are forced to spend so much time away from what really matters to us? And I think that's what those people got back was actual meaning.
Yeah. You don't need money anymore. It becomes completely meaningless unless you give it a new meaning, as they do.
They do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Should I tell?
You can tell them. Go on.
Okay. In the Huon, there's a small group who create a concept called reconciliation, and that means they've realised that capitalism has brought them to the space, and they rework the use of those coins into a way to create peace. So they have renamed the coins. There's a Skerrick and, they're all sort of like almost derogatory names, but they're used to create peace so that if somebody offends somebody or breaks something or does something, they can actually offer that person a coin to, in the same sort of scale as they believe their transgression was, and use these coins to create peace. And there's even a hoarder coin, which if somebody starts trying to, you know, get these coins by creating situations with an ode, etc., they can be given a hoarder coin, and that means that those coin, the, all of their coins are removed from circulation. And seeing those coins are to create peace, then they have removed the ability for this community to have peace. So it's just an interesting concept of how we can swap things around.
You're listening to ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania. My name is Joel Reinberger. Linda Coburn is with us. She's the author of Eat My Shadow, which is a cli-fi book set here in Tasmania. The familiarity of it, I think, is part of the joy for me, is talking about Vince's Saddle and how important that is in a journey between Hobart and Huonville. That familiarity really makes it more... It makes it more real. It has much more of an impact on you when you recognise everything. Now, all writers love words. That's part of kind of what defines us. But one of your characters is a linguist, so he and his son are just constantly throwing around words, enormous words. And so you've even got a list at the back. Here's the words you've probably read in this that you may not recognise. What are your favourites?
Oh, that's a good question. Molassitude was actually one that I really liked, and it doesn't even come from the word molasses. But, you know, when you're actually feeling really tired and you feel like you're moving through molasses, that's molassitude. I think that was one of my favourite.
That's lovely. Look, in the book itself, gibbous. I adore gibbous because, you know, it's when the moon is between half and full, and it's a word that 2 centuries ago was really common because particularly for sailors, knowing the state of the moon was really important.
Mm.
And that was a connection that lots of people had, just the same way people used to know cardinal directions, and nobody knows those cardinal directions anymore. How has it been getting this to publication?
I self-published. I have a number of reasons why I've done that. One of them, I really wanted to see it from beginning to end as a whole creative journey, and that's been really fantastic to be able to design it the inside and the out and actually sort of gently illustrate it through as well. And so I really enjoyed that process. I had sort of put it out there for the validation of getting published through a publisher, and I wasn't getting anywhere because apparently Australia's not so great on cli-fi or dystopian books. They just sort of say, well, we've done enough of that. So it was always, I was just getting rejections and nobody was reading it. And I'm kind of running out of time. I have a degenerative disease and I know that if I want to have my say and as like, what is it I keep saying to people? I don't want to die with my bottle still corked. So I went through that process myself, and I have been through the actual publishing industry with a published book, Living the Good Life, many years ago now, and that wasn't a great experience. So all in all, it ended up being that I would self-publish it.
Well, look, it's a beautiful looking book, I've got to say. Like, it's a really lovely cover, and it's pictures in there. So it's not a simply published book either, is it?
No, I really enjoyed putting some love into that, yeah.
Where can people get a copy of Eat My Shadow if they like the sound of it, Linda?
I think Fuller's has some still. Actually, Fuller's was a fairly pivotal, thank you, a place in the book. And there's a particular scene in there that a lot of people have a hard time forgetting, a bit like Vince's Saddle. We've had people say they'll never drive over it and feel the same way again.
Not think about what happens there and how Finn gets there. And
yeah.
Yep.
And we also sell it online at our website, togetherpress.com.au. But it is available through Amazon, Booktopia, pretty much anywhere online.
Lovely. Linda Coburn, lovely to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joel.